Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and everybody out there, it is September 1, how about that, 2015, and my goodness, is the same stuff going on, or is it worse? What do you think, people? What's going on out there? What's the important thing for today? I got really something important, but I'll let my guests go first. Who has something really important?
Well, there's so much going on, Mother Hattie. Gosh, I just don't even know where to start. I just had planned to piggyback on something other people brought up. I know I saw.
Oh, well,
President
I'll tell you
Obama.
One thing. I can start it out then because this is really
right.
Important. I was being nice to the guests since I talk too much all the time. Well, we're going back to the Carolinas.
Oh, okay.
And what we have in the Carolinas is Nations Ford Community Church, Bishop Philip Davis, gone, left earth. And the Sheriff's Department in Jesse Helmland is saying that he was cleaning his weapon to go target practice with his son, and he was cleaning his weapon and accidentally did himself. Accidental shooting. Well, when I looked at a documentary of Dr. Randy Short, there was a man on there, and he talked about that exact sort of thing. And I hope you all can call us in and give us your email or if we could text it to you, because this documentary is quite interesting. There's a man on there, and he's talking about the harassment that he'd been receiving and what was going on with him. And I would be willing to bet this is that same sort of thing for a couple of reasons. Number one, Bishop Davis was very helpful with the information and community forums as it related to the Jonathan Farrell and the Carrick trial, where the officer had shot Jonathan Farrell in 2013. And that trial was just over with a couple of weeks ago. And now all of a sudden, Bishop Davis has an accident at his home. At any rate, I found that very preposterous. He was also instrumental in trying to start up what's called some type of accountability around the policing and the excessive force piece. And I guess that is intimidating when a person of his stature, of his nature, of his propensity will get involved. So I think some other things are going on here. I don't think it's as quite as simple as the Sheriff's Department in what's called Union County, Jesse Helmland, is saying. It's very unlikely. So that's what's really been at the top of my list of relevant things for us to kind of follow and take a look at, because he has a very huge church there, a mega church. They have streets named after him. They have a community of living where there are families living in there. He has the only and first African-American male academy that that church started a couple of years ago. And it's just really, really interesting. And his church is huge. Luckily, his wife, which is probably devastated, is partners with him in the ministry. She's also a minister. He has a couple of sons. And one of them is at another campus there in the church. And he has, I think, another one that he worked with at the main campus level. They also have a college. So, I mean, we're talking about people that were doing things. We're talking about people that are a man that was really what you would say leaving a legacy of independence, a legacy of self-determination. If you have your own, you know, at least K-8 school on a college campus, it's just astonishing. And people doing those kinds of things are a threat to the mainstream, so to speak, for some reason. These people don't want to treat you right in the whole diaspora of America, but then they don't want you to have your own. So what does that tell us? And I pose that question. Who'd like to take that on? You don't want to treat the people right.
I'll tell you what I think it means. It means that one of the fundamental things that we don't seem to want to do is protect ourselves. When you have resources that are set up to do that kind of good, because see, a church like that, I keep telling people, I'm not religious, I don't believe in all of that stuff. I'm talking about what I believe, but I don't accept all of that religious stuff. But if a church is willing to do what this church has done, that's a very, very positive thing. That's what we need. People like that and venues like that need protection. If something is that valuable, you have to understand forces that are against it are going to try to do something. And the way they do things is it's hard to see where the things came from, because they do things secretly. Yeah. The so-called white folks in this society have secret societies and secret agencies and all of that sort of stuff. And they, even within the government, there's secret agencies and shadow elements within the government that when people say, oh, the government did such and the government, well, not all of the government is doing that, because you don't need all of the government or all of anything to do anything. You just need a small cadre of people who are committed to do something, and you can get it done. And that's who do these sorts of things. But we don't seem to think that we need to protect our people. We seem to think that the divine providence and deities and all that, in the end, is going to save us. In the meantime, we get picked off. People like this need to be protected. And when I'm not a black Muslim, I don't believe in Islam or anything, but I was telling a friend of mine in 1967, I went to the mosque in San Francisco to hear Muhammad Ali speak and whatnot. And before I went to the mosque and whatnot, me and my friend, you know, my college buddies, he was out smoking reefers and everything, and I rolled a joint and put it in my wallet. Got all dressed up and went down to the mosque. And you have to stand up in line to get into the mosque, and they search you. Mm-hmm. And they went through all of my search, didn't search, and he picked up took my wallet and went and looked through it, because they want to know who's coming in there. And he found the joint. And mm-hmm. he said, "You can't. This is a church, brother. You can't bring that in here." I said, "Well, get rid of it." He said, "No, you get rid of it. You have to be respectful enough to know you can go into a church. You can't bring it in here." My point being is they don't take any chance with anybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody ain't going to walk into their facilities and kill nobody and get away with it. They think in terms of protecting their people, man, which is what we need to do. That's called discipline, which we don't have. And that is one of the things we need to focus on. We have all these resources. We can do this. We can
wow.
have money, but we don't have no discipline and whatnot. And we don't know how to deal with these things and allocate these things. And that's what we need to do. This man should have been protected. All of this stuff should have been protected. That's what I have to say.
That is great, Marvin, that I never thought about it.
Keyword, Marvin. Yes, discipline. Discipline. Marvin said the key word what black people are lacking. I just had this conversation with two people prior to this show. We still are stuck in such a captive / Slavic mindset, and we don't have the discipline as we once did to be organized and to work for ourselves and to focus on, like he's just mentioned, protecting ourselves. Brother Brown and Kanti speaks about that. There's no army for black people. There's no army of protection for black women, for the children, for the men. We're not doing what we should do. And he's right. I've been to several engagements where Farrakhan has spoken, and they divide those brothers and sisters up. The sisters pat down the sisters, and the brothers pat down the brothers. And you will not be coming in there without being fully searched. The women, too. They take you.
And I think that started after Malcolm X was assassinated, correct?
No, they always did that. They always.
Wow, how did those guys get in there?
Yeah, they were always serious. They were always conscious about that, because when I went to, you can't even go into communities without being put under some kind of scrutiny. They patrol their own communities. They are not relying on the authorities to do anything for them. I remember one time standing in Oakland, and brothers were complaining about how dirty the streets were and all that, and this Muslim looked at him and said, "You live here?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you got a broom, brother. If you're concerned about the street, you get out there. If you live here, you clean your own streets." That we have a very, our people have a very slave mentality. I hate to talk about slavery and whatnot because I get tired of it. But we always expect somebody to do something to help us or do something for us when things that we can do ourselves. Things we can do ourselves. It's simple as that. We need the discipline to protect ourselves.
It's slavery and religion. Because black people always waiting on Jesus to come and fix it. And Jesus went out into the community, the Jesus that you read about, went out into the community and did the work. Like you said, pick up the broom. All these people want to be Dr. Imhotep, Goddess Imhotep, rob this and that, but you won't even keep the darn community clean. But you won't even help nobody. You know, it's just crazy. It's really crazy, and we do need to take on more responsibility and stop being so lazy.
But in Philadelphia, the people there, the MOVE organization, were doing just that, and it boils down to who has the most might, military might.
And when you do see people like that trying to do something like that, what's the bishop's name again, Mother Hattie, at United Nations?
Bishop Philip Davis. I'm just so torn about
Very
that.
Very nice
just,
looking, yeah. I am too. Nice looking,
and,
young, healthy man, and people like Marvin and maybe other people on this line, the people that are listening, we know that those are some of the same excuses they give for people being accidentally killed. Plane crashes and cleaning out your gun accidents, something like that. Plane crashes, gun accidents. Those are car accidents. Plane crashes, car accidents. Gun accidents. When someone needs to be neutralized, those are the tactics that these military operatives, governmental operatives use. When they need to get rid of a reporter, a witness, what happened to John Crawford's girlfriend, the one that was killed in Walmart, and she was getting ready to come out with how they killed her boyfriend, fiance, questioning her, trying to get her to lie on John Crawford and all of this stuff. She gets ready to sue the Beaver, Ohio Police Department. All of a sudden, she's dead in a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
That reporter who had the car accident and his car blew up when he hit the tree, he was the one that uncovered all the terror that was going on, I think, at Guantanamo Bay. And not Guantanamo Bay, but just the whole deal about how some of these military soldiers were just killing innocent Iraqis. All of a sudden, his car runs into a tree and he blows up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, come on, Ron Brown. We were just talking about the other one, Bishop Miles.
Mickey
Monroe,
Leland.
Plane accident.
Mickey Leland.
Plane accident. Barcaze, plane accident. I forgot who was on that plane with them. It was something about to go down. They were involved in financing the movement. Plane goes down. This is so. it's trite. I'm bored. Mm-hmm. Like Dr. Shaw said, I'm bored. I'm bored. It's like the shooting here in Texas with the guy so-called walking up to the sheriff and shooting him and then shooting him. You know, you don't even really know what to believe. This story about the reporter, the two reporters being killed by this black man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just don't know what to, yeah. I mean, when you look at the video, at first when Sarah mentioned that, I was like, you know, I don't know, because I hadn't really had enough time to even analyze the video. But over the past 2 days after I sat there and watched it, I'm like, yeah, okay, so, like, you mean to tell me this man that you know that you harassed is walking towards you so closely with a gun pointed and you don't even see him out of your peripheral vision? You nor the lady nor the cameraman with the camera, oh, he's just really filming the scenery so much that he don't hear somebody walking on a wood deck. You know how you hear an old wood deck when you walk on it. You know what I'm saying? You know you hear, mm-hmm. you hear the sounds, you hear the wood moving. So you mean to tell me y'all didn't see this man? So you just don't know what to believe with these people that play so many mind games and tricks, and they have us all thrown off and confused and can't protect the community and can't do what we need to do. But we have got to change, and those are my thoughts. We have to do something different, because what we have been doing is clearly not working. This man was doing the work. We clown so many pastors and preachers that are not doing the work, but he was doing the work, like Dr. King, like Malcolm, like Nat Turner, like Gabriel Prosser, like so many others that were doing the work, and then they're shot down because there's nobody protecting them, like David Walker. You know, so many people doing the work, and then you got these other ones like T.D. Jakes. He'll live forever. He'll live to be 130 years old. Nobody will try to do anything to him because they're not going to let nobody do anything to him until he starts trying to really be true and stand up for black people, which he's not. He let his own family go astray. So I don't know why black people think he's going to lead them.
This is David. I looked up a couple of articles, about three articles, about Reverend Davis's so-called accident. And it seems the 911 call was made by his wife. And from what I could tell, they were the only two people in the house. The police story seems to be verified. She said that he was cleaning his gun, and it went off, and she said it looks like he's been shot in the heart, and he was cleaning the gun. So for all that might have happened or whatever conspiracies are possible, this might not be one of them. A person is cleaning a gun. You have equipment around you. If you were cleaning a gun and left it there and went to the store, somebody could, you know, walk into the area that you were cleaning the gun and tell that's what you were doing, because there's a number of pieces of equipment involved with that. So from what I can tell, in all likelihood, this tragic story is what happened. Hattie has a lot more information than I do. I didn't know anything about him planning to go target shooting with his son. But also, I think it would be very questionable that conspirators would come into his house unbeknownst to him or his wife while he was cleaning the gun and staged this gun cleaning accident. So what's interesting to me about this is here you have this man with all these astonishing accomplishments kills himself in a gun accident, which is something that happens with some frequency, particularly with automatics, because people don't realize that there's a gun in the chamber.
Bullet in the chamber. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you. How could you kill yourself? How could you clean a gun, a loaded gun? Anybody that deals with guns would know better, but that's a valid point. With the automatics, there can be a bullet left in the chamber, but that's what I was going to ask you. You know, it didn't seem to make sense, but yeah, that's true. That's so true.
Yeah, well, his wife said that, yeah, I mean, she's the one who heard the noise and so on and went in the room and saw what happened, and she didn't seem to, think there was any foul play at all. And
you got
to
know where you're living at. I hope you're right. I hope you're right, David. I hope you're right. And I hope your thoughts are correct. And I hope that those guys were accurate. But I just don't trust any of this stuff. People have set up so many things. They set up so many things, and they make it look so truthful to the person. It just seems very ironic. You have the Charleston, South Carolina shooting at that church. Now you're saying this one was an accident. Then there were some accidents about churches being burned there that they kept undercover.
Lightning struck
and this state is known for hiding things around. God only knows what the woman, his wife, really knows, for the simple fact, number one, she's able to corroborate anything that they force them to tell, if they threaten her children, if they threaten her grandchildren, if they threaten her life.
Mm-hmm.
People will do all kinds of things to stay alive. So I just
Absolutely.
Don't trust them. This place is a treacherous place, as this whole country is. And I just can't ever believe anything they say. But I hope you're right. I mean, there's a glimmer of hope in me that says, okay, maybe it was an accident. But my gut tells me there's a strategic plan about this country to destroy certain people.
Oh, I agree with you.
I go by my gut, Mother Hattie, and not only my gut, I go by their track record. Nothing beats a track record.
The Carolinas, my family's from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The Carolinas was the original. Charleston was originally where they started the slave auction started. The Carolinas, that's the apex of this whole thing. That's where everything started. The Carolinas, most of my family still lived, a lot of the generation that didn't, they moved back down. They're in North Carolina, South Carolina, and they moved down there. But the South is entrenched in that Confederate mentality. They ain't never going to give up. They ain't never going to stop. A lot of our people have migrated to the South and to certain areas of the South and they're there. But I know I'm a diehard Yankee, you know. What can I say? I was born in New York and that's what molded me. And I know I just wouldn't fit in the South. So that's a place that I totally refuse to live. But the Carolinas, they're entrenched in that. And it ain't never going to change as long as them. They have those so-called white folks living down there. It ain't never going to change. They try to say, well, the next generation, I've been hearing that forever. It ain't going to change. So I generally stay away from that part of the country. Even though I got a lot of relatives down there, my mother is from there, and everything, I can't be bothered. But not that it doesn't happen in other places. But
exactly.
South Carolina is a decidedly very racist state. Decidedly. My parents' family, mother's family from Columbia, West Columbia, South Carolina. I know. We used to go down there in the summer when we were little kids when they still had a farm. And it's a decidedly racist, you know, and very violent place. And nothing that happens in that area surprises me. It just doesn't.
I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
No, I said good evening.
Good evening.
Oh, good evening, Brother Brown. Good evening. How you doing? Well, you know, I listened to your comment. I came in a little late. But one thing we must have to understand about the racist nature of this whole country, no state is excluded. Now, if you look back at the elements of the Civil War, I think I touched base on this the last time we was on the radio. The whole fabric of the Civil War was an illusion. The whole fabric of Reconstruction was an illusion. We buy into stuff that really does not pertain, number one, to our culture, and number two, to our existence and survival. Okay? Every state in this union is not free from white supremacy and racism. There's not a state within the confines of this country that act upon the Constitution that their state constitution does not include racist elements that was reverberated from the past and in the embryonic stages of this country. So when this country fought the Civil War, one thing that we have never been taught was that the Civil War was an economic war. It had nothing to do with freedom of the slaves, because after the war, the slaves were never freed. The Emancipation Proclamation never freed our people. It was a wartime proclamation because they had lost so many troops at Bull Run that they didn't have enough white people to fight. They had the first military draft for the North in the city of New York, which produced the riots. If you ever want to see how the riots were taking place, look at this movie called The Gang of New York. Gangs of New York. Okay, it's a lot of history in that movie. Every state within the United States is a racist state. Every state is a police state. Everything is done on the back of the economic concerns of white supremacy and racism, and none are exempt. Charleston had one of the biggest slave markets and auction blocks because the importation of slaves, a lot of people think that they imported slaves directly from Africa to the United States. The slaves went to the Caribbean and to Brazil because the first people that actually practiced the slave trade were the Portuguese. And somebody named Christopher Columbus, who was actually a Sephardic Jew. That was a Jew that was hiding to be a Catholic because during the Spanish Inquisition, because he didn't want his elements of Judaism to be exposed publicly. And what happened was that they could not bring, because the English owned the majority of the land in this country, and the Spanish, they could not automatically bring the slaves.
Did we lose you, Dr. Brown?
I think so. He'd probably come back on. But what he said is very valid. It's true. You know, to the word, you know, that's the truth. I was not trying to intimate that somehow any state was less racist than southern states. That is ridiculous. That's not what I was saying. I was personalizing it and saying what my feelings was about a place like the Carolinas. That's what I was. But any African American should realize that these problems exist all over this country in every state, and that's the bottom line. But when he was talking about things culture foreign to the culture, one of my pet peeves is most Americans of African ancestry have been brainwashed to the point where they just perceive themselves as being a Western people. As simple as that. We're not a Western people, but that's the way they think, because that's the only thing we've ever known, and they're entrenched in this stuff. And all they do is mimic Western behavior and everything. And anything else is foreign to them, and that's what the problem is. When we can get ourselves to the point to where we understand we're not a Western people, and we start relating to something that is, even though we know less about it, and whatnot, we have to start relating to it if we want to change and develop a new mentality. The thing is, you know everything.
just about everything, enough about slavery and our little 200-year experience here in the Americas, but most of all, people don't know a thing about everything before that. Well, that's thousands of years of history and cultural things that we need to know about. But
yeah.
most of all, people ain't interested
Indeed.
In that. The cheap comment you hear from our people is, I ain't no African. If you're going to send me somewhere, send me back to East Central Illinois. I mean, that's the way our people think. We really, really have bought into being a Western people. We are not a Western people. It might be all we know. But we're not. It's just like the language. Language is a very powerful thing and whatnot. But all we know is English. That's all because our understanding and knowledge of all the languages that we spoke before we came here have been wiped out. So all we know is English. But we don't speak English as good as people that just came here and whatnot. We ain't serious about the things that we need to be serious about. That's what the problem is. With, you know.
Wow, well said. Well said, Marvin, as always.
But I say that sometimes what we're talked about is the victim. You're blaming the victim in so many instances. If you've been terrorized for all these years, hundreds, why wouldn't you have some humanity that says, well, I can't do anything if I live. I can't do anything if I die. So what's the, you know, you make the best of it. Some people feel that way. They don't have that courage to do something about things.
Probably most people feel that way. Let's be realistic. Within most groups even, you know. Most people probably do feel that way. You're right. Most people don't have the kind of strengths that are needed and whatnot. That's why there's always usually a vanguard group of people within a group of people to do things, you know. It's simple as that. There's always a small group of people that will spearhead something, some kind of a revolution or an uprising or something. It isn't the masses of people. Eventually, everybody gets on the bandwagon because they realize this is what we need. This does work. We do have strength in these numbers. And come on, let's go. That usually happens. It's usually a small amount of people and whatnot. That's the bottom line. But the small groups of people that we have that have emanated from our community have never been protected. I mean, if the community would have really got behind the Black Panther Party when they were doing what they were doing, they wouldn't have been able to wipe them out. They would have been, you know, they would have wiped out all the people and whatnot. But everybody was sitting back for the most part, the masses of people, you know, and letting the government, the COINTELPRO program or whatever, take it, do what it did, and it effectively eliminated them. But if they were behind them in force, they probably wouldn't have been able to get away with that. If we can get 2 million people to march on Washington, you know, which as far as I'm concerned, it was a nice gesture, but I don't see what it really has done. And we should be able to get 25 or 30 million people to get behind one solid thing and whatnot and be steadfast and not be moved out of the way. In other words, you know, they're always throwing this African proverb around that it takes a village to raise a child. Basically, that is all for one and one for all. Simple as that. We can be as individualistic as we want to be, but because individuals will always break through, you know. But as a group, if we go through anything as a group, it's going to have to come in terms of a group dynamic. That's my personal belief. The individuals, there's always going to be the George Washington Carvers and this Bill Cosby or this guy that can become billionaires and can do this and that and invent this and invent that and all that. But as a group, those individuals ain't going to pull a whole group through. If the group is going to be successful, it's going to have to be done on a group level. You know, that's how I feel.
Okay.
Well, one of the problems that I see, and this is probably the main problem that Black people have in this country, you can call it laziness, you can call it self-hatred, which is probably a better description. But in my experience, Black people are very likely to get hostile toward other black people who have accomplished more than they have. And they haven't accomplished a goddamn thing. I've been around people who, they don't know what my profession is or much of anything about me, except that they don't like the way I talk because they think I talk like a white person. I talk like somebody, since I don't speak Ebonics or anything approaching that, they developed the attitude that I talk this way because I think I'm better than the average black person. And they don't like that. When I was, when my mother told some relatives in my family that I was going to go to college, and when I say some relatives, I mean one who was an average drug addict at the time and another one who was on welfare, they copped an attitude. They told her there wasn't anything so special about me. They didn't see why she should send me to college. You know, what was so great about me? And these are not people who had accomplished anything particularly in their lives. But Marvin was telling me about 6 weeks ago that he saw something on YouTube about a group of black people stomping the hell out of this black kid because he made the honor roll. There was another story in Oakland a couple of years back about a black student, high school student, who wanted to be a doctor, and his black brothers, one of his black brothers in the high school, just shot him to death, the reason he thought he was better than us. This is completely typical. What would be the likelihood of a Chinese or Vietnamese student being stomped at his high school by members of his own race for making an honor roll? Zero.
Maybe not for that, but perhaps for something else. I worked in a school that had high Vietnamese population, and they were shooting and killing each other as well. Because the people that you are around close enough to are the ones that you generally do that to. Now, being an old 37-year public school teacher and principal and associate superintendent, I have also seen and experienced the young people who are very rally behind each other and say, oh, this one's doing great. I've seen that. I've seen the ones who were also very helpful to each other. What can I do to help you? And that's what we need to moderate, I think, and see more of and display more of. And I think a lot of times what the news media does is it does present to us those negative things that they want to have out there, and that plays on the feelings and the emotions of people who have been discriminated against, and I'm one of them too, and treated really poorly, badly, worse than, you know, by other blacks. But at the same time, this is the presentation the media wants to put out there. If you call them up and you ask them to present this other side of the story, they'd pretend they couldn't find anybody else where young people were supportive of each other that are black people, African-American people. Because
well
I've had
said.
Plenty of African-American people support me and my endeavors, too, and I've had a few that have been just awful, worse than any Ku Klux Klan mama would have been.
Well said. I agree with you.
So I think we have to keep it in perspective. The media wants a certain level of us to think that. I mean, that's just like black-on-black crime. Well, yeah. There's also white-on-white crime. Yep, they were killing each other off, these little boys out here being misled. But white folks kill up their whole mama and their dad and their family and their brothers and sisters. That's really not presented out there as long and as often as the other negatives of us. So media has a way of presenting itself in a very, very uneven balance. So.
My statement is really not based that much on media. I use a couple of examples from news stories and YouTube because they were particularly vivid. But most of what I'm saying comes from my own personal experience and being around black people. There are a lot of black programs in the 70s and the early 80s, television programs that were being emceed by these real so-called down-home grassroots black people who were conducting these programs. And I've seen a number of instances where they would get real hostile and sarcastic toward well-educated black people who spoke like they were well-educated on their programs. They wanted the brother and sister, the Ebonics, because that's what being black is supposed to be all about.
If you ever notice any of the black sitcoms on TV, the villainous black guy is always the black guy that is well-educated and well-spoken and all that. That's true. If you look at any of them, that is the perception of what they call an Uncle Tom, which I don't use that term anymore, because Uncle Tom he was a hero, basically, when she wrote the story. It was supposedly about how heroic he was, because he did never transcend against his own people. But if you look at all of the sitcoms on TV that are so-called black-oriented sitcoms, the villain or the schmuck or the bad guy in it is always a guy that appears to be more educated, speaks well, and doesn't have what you would call mainstream so-called black likes. Like he might like rock music instead of soul music or something like that. That's one of the things. And so I agree with you to that extent. Yeah.
When you were talking about that, I was thinking about the program In Living Color,
mm-hmm.
which had a lot of content that was grossly insulting to black people, and they also on that program, which was basically operated by the Winans family, they expressed a lot of hostility toward a number of famous black people, including Oprah Winfrey, who they were, you know, calling fat and this and that, and to the point where she was quite insulted by it.
But could we want to read a statement about Women United's stance on some things. I hate to cut you off, hold that point, but Ashura, could you read that statement for us? And if we have one more minute, David, you can feel free to send that rest of that out. Thank you.
Oh, well, we can let David go ahead on and speak, and then I'm pulling it up. My computer accidentally just shut down, Mother Hattie. You know how that happens sometimes.
Yes. Okay, David,
so
finish
it's not
up.
Gonna,
well,
I think
what it's going to cut off, though.
What was interesting about that was for all what appeared to be their independence as black people, that show was being paid for and sponsored by the white network that knew exactly what they were doing, and they wanted a show that would denigrate other black people, and then when they got tired of it, they just took it off the air. They put it back on because it was very popular, and you're seeing these reruns, a lot of which are, you know, have absolutely disgusting portrayals of black people, you know, the Winans, they went along with it. They were the Uncle Tom.
Okay, David, I apologize. I have it up now.
Okay, hurry. It's gonna. We got
a little bit of
40 seconds.
Okay. All right. This is a statement from Women United regarding the attacks on black women, such as Rekia Boyd, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Sandra Bland, and many others. Women United denounced and denouncing and detest the vicious attacks on black women we have been historically plagued with and seems to have escalated in more recent times. We are 100% human beings and deserve to be protected with and with equal justice under the law and other entities. The recent vicious behavior and disrespect of the lives of black women must stop.